Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the podcast this week. Before we get to my guests, my YouTube channel's up and running, and we're really excited about it. It's youtube.com/PaulMercurio. You can subscribe there as well. Every 4 or 5 days, we're posting new video content. It's really fun, cool stuff that we're excited about. So please check it out and subscribe and tell your friends about it and ask them to subscribe too. We want to build a channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Would appreciate it. Also follow me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @PaulMercurio. MECURIO, one R in my last name. And you'll see some stuff we're posting there as well. My guest this week, a genius, and I don't use that word lightly, truly an artistic genius, the documentary filmmaker, Ken Burns. I have been so excited for a long time to have a chance to talk to him about his process, how he makes these films, what motivates him, what he's trying to achieve with them. And you get all of that and more in this interview. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. It was really, really great honor to have him on the show. So enjoy Ken Burns. Check out the YouTube channel and social media. And enjoy Ken. I am so excited to have this guest on. His body of work is not just voluminous, but it's such a high level. He's an Emmy and Peabody Award winning filmmaker, America's preeminent documentary filmmaker, Ken Burns, whose films include country music, the Civil War, Brooklyn Bridge, baseball, the Vietnam War. And his latest film airing tonight is East Lake Meadows, A Public Housing Story. Ken, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to have you on the show. I've been a huge, huge fan of your work.
Thank you, Paul. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We have a little bit of something in common because my wife's family has a house in Mascoma Lake, and we've been to Sunapee and fish there a lot in Mascoma. And
I live in southwestern New Hampshire and have for the last 40 years and have a little place on Sunapee that we go to when we can.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful up there.
So beautiful country.
Yeah. Now the current doc that's out, it tells the story of the history of East Lake Meadows, a former public housing community in Atlanta. And I was curious as to why this project for you and why now that you felt you needed or wanted to put this out.
Well, you know, it's funny. These projects take many, many years. And I should first stop and tell you that unlike all the other films that you mentioned, I'm just the executive producer on the film. And my daughter, Sarah, and her husband, David McMahon, we've collaborated as co-directors before on Jackie Robinson and are working now on one about Muhammad Ali made this. But you choose something years ago because the story sounds good. And you don't know enough about the subject and you want to dive in and learn as much as you can. And so for us, you know, it was a revelation about how public housing started. It started in the Depression for mostly white middle-class people who had fallen into the lower class. And this was an attempt to sort of give them a leg up. And it was extended to African-Americans. But then in a very cruel twist of fate, because of redlining, they ended up resegregating neighborhoods, or sometimes segregating neighborhoods that were integrated in order to create separate public housing. And invariably, the African-American housing was very substandard and began to fall apart. And there was no help and no assistance. And so they become these terrible, terrible places. And East Lake is a prime example. It's in Atlanta. It was, in the eastern extremes of Atlanta. And it was where they were going to warehouse poor black people. And so we tell the story of the people who live there, how they tore it down eventually and how a new housing was put up. But many of the folks who had lived there weren't able to get back into the mixed income housing. So it's a complicated story of lots of really great intentions, but mostly the story of the lives of people who live there. Now, I've made films about the U.S. for more than 40 years. And I've also made films about us, not just the capital U.S., but about us, the two-letter lowercase plural pronoun. And what I've learned over those 40-plus years is that there's only us, no them. We're all in this together. And when we tend to, as we do, say, oh, they are like this, or they let it be, we don't know. So we introduce you to a whole cast of characters of people who survived at East Lake Meadows, who made lemonade out of the lemons. Who, again, there's a wonderful story of affirmation in the face of adversity, as we also learn the story of housing. And who knew that by the time it was released, we would be, you know, on the edge of a major recession in which housing will once again, as it's been in the political conversation, front and center. And we need this example to remind us of where we don't want to go in the future, whether it's construction methods, whether it's redlining, whether it's discrimination. You know, whites had a path up and out of the projects through the mortgage deduction they could take. But African Americans weren't given that. And so it was then presumed, as these places fell apart, that that's what they wanted. They, again, not us. And that's, of course, the last thing they wanted. They wanted the same thing that everybody wants. So we want the same thing. And I think all of our films are about that. The late historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr. said, there's too much pluribus and not enough unum. Our films are about the possibility of unum.
Yeah.
You know, we have a website at PBS called Unum, which curates the evergreen themes that rise up from all of our films, like race, like freedom, like politics, like hard times, mm-hmm. like art, innovation, war, politics. All of that stuff is dealt with at Unum. And for the kids, PBS Learning Media online has a Ken Burns Classroom that curates a lot of these themes with lesson plans for teachers and students and clips from the various films that are appropriate to the age and time that these subjects are taught in the curriculum. So the scoop that I can give you today is that on Thursday nights, PBS is going to be preempting all of its regular programming for the foreseeable future and essentially having American History with Ken Burns night for the Thursday nights for the foreseeable future. We're starting with our 7-part series on the history of the Roosevelts. We'll do our history of World War II called The War. We'll do the national parks, some one-off specials and things like that that will permit us to sort of perhaps create a campfire around which, you know, this time an electronic campfire around which we can sort of try to sing our epic verses together, our Homeric verses. They're also available for streaming, just as we made last week the baseball series available for free, all of us for free, for streaming purposes. Once they canceled the baseball and the other national sports, I just said, oh my goodness, we can't let people starve. So we put baseball out, and lots of people are downloading and watching.
Streaming, oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Well, first of all, the Thursday night American History, we will be front and center. My son and my wife and I every night are, you know, watching something as a family. And he's seen some of your work, but there's a lot more he should see. So thank you for that. And thank you for re-releasing baseball, because that is sort of our family sport. We're Red Sox fans.
Well, we're
and,
in tough times.
Yeah.
Tough times and scary times. And we look to our past for examples where we've gotten through things like this before. And I think when you look at the Roosevelt with the story of just superb leadership, you talk about the shared sacrifice in order to get through the Depression and World War II, all of these can become inspiration for us and perhaps new inspiration for younger people who may not be aware of this part of the history.
You know, there, did you find in talking to the residents of East Meadows Lake that some, albeit, you know, it's a very low-income housing and obviously not very comfortable, to say the least. But did they wax nostalgic for that project anyway? Because in some level, they had a shared experience and you know, they had their little spot on the basketball court where they hung out together at 6
That's
o'clock
right.
at night.
Right? That's right. You know, well, the English language has this word called home. And it means something, and it doesn't matter. People moved into Eastlake in the early 70s with just great, great expectations that everything was going to be just fantastic and hunky-dory. And all of a sudden, they realized they were in this substandard, almost criminally, not almost, criminally negligent construction practices. Raw sewage is bubbling out. And so people looked at the decay and said, ah, this is what they wanted. But of course, it's not what they wanted. And there's lots of people who told stories of growing up, of learning to play the piano, of having a snowball fight at that rare snowfall in Atlanta. We found the footage, you know, in addition to the sirens of the police car and the drug death during the crack epidemic. So, I mean, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. I can imagine. You know, you talked about the America and us, and it's something that struck me in your work is that it's quintessentially American. And in fact, David Harlan, the historian, said calls it dramas of integration, one whose values and ideals can be found not in European intellectual traditions, but in American social practices in the myriad of things. Americans actually do things together. This is his quote. And it's clear that it comes through. The passion and the compassion of your work also comes through. But you know, this you mentioned you started 40 years ago. Was this focus intended early on, or did it evolve into a quintessentially American focus for you in your filmmaking?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. It's a chicken and the egg thing. I mean, my first film, Brooklyn Bridge, told the epic story of the building of the Brooklyn Bridge, but it was also talking about universal themes about who we were. There was corruption there, as well as magnificent art-level construction. There was great biography and dynamic stuff. So almost immediately, I began to realize, and it was in some ways in conversation with the popularity of these films. The next one was on the celibate religious sect, the Shakers, then on Huey Long, the turbulent Southern demagogue, and the Statue of Liberty. And I realized all of a sudden when I finished The Civil War, which is about the sixth or seventh film in, this is my passion. This is my life. This is what we're going to do. And I'm glad you added the word compassion, because the emotional archaeology that I have tried to tell, in addition to excavating what would be heretofore dry dates, facts, and events, suggests that we may have a different relationship with our history that understands the uniqueness of the American experience, possibly because of these two insulating oceans that incubate such extraordinary things, but also incubate not so extraordinary things: violence, love of guns, you know, passion for the almighty dollar. All of these things have to be taken in hand in hand. So I wasn't looking to sanitize American history, to turn it into a kind of Madison Avenue version of it. And at the same time, I wasn't going to be so completely revisionistic that we were just always critical. I wanted to see that in the same breath, it could be neither and both. That even in the sort of the calmest appearing water, that there could be tremendous undertow. That our greatest heroes had flaws. That the worst villains that we could set up also had virtue. So I wasn't trying to make something, you know, a mush in the middle.
Right.
But try to add a kind of compassionate dynamic to telling stories. And that also I felt that we missed an opportunity, particularly in the last 40 years as we've become increasingly polarized, to come together around our shared past.
You know, you use the word emotional, the words emotional archaeology, which I wanted to talk to you about, because, you know, in my mind, before I started to become familiar with your work, not just in preparation for this interview, obviously, but, you know, to me, documentaries were sort of the idea of this sort of cold, factual thing, right? So I think you've described it as like, here's a quote of yours. Here's a big problem. Here are the bad guys. Here are the good guys. How do we change this? It's like an editorial. And then you go on to say, I'm more interested in an exercise in emotional archaeology that aspires to be works of art. What does emotional archaeology mean to you?
Well, I think it's possible in that dry sense that you saw documentaries as to just excavate the facts and the events and the dates of the past and then sort of string them together. American history then is basically a series of presidential administrations punctuated by wars, period, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's a bottom up as well as a top down history. You don't want to throw out the top down. Those great men did do great things. Mm. But it isn't just the story of great men. It's the story of women and labor and minorities and ordinary people like you and me struggling and doing things and achieving it. I mean, there was no rich person. You know, there were kids on the beach at Normandy that did not have any interest in empire or acquisition of any kind of territory or material wealth. They were there for ideas. You know, I'm interested in that. That gets my curiosity. How do you get off that LSD and get on to Normandy in June of 1944?
Yeah.
Who sends that off? What gets you off an immigrant's boat and into the Union Army and down into a bloody Civil War battle? Mm. You know, they're ideas. We're a country that understands exactly where we were born, Philadelphia. You know, we know when, July 4th, 1776, and we know what the creed is. It's the second sentence of the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Now, I'm, you know, a ways into that sentence, not done with it yet, but I have to stop because the guy who wrote that sentence, all men are created equal, owned more than 200 human beings and never saw the contradiction, never saw the hypocrisy, and more important, never saw fit in his lifetime to free any one of those individuals and set in motion an American history that will always be dealing with race until we get over what historians call our original sin. And this is, you know, the subject of almost all of my work, not because I go looking for it, but because it's always there.
Yeah.
If you have people who have the peculiar experience of being unfree in a free land, that's not something you relegate to February, the coldest and shortest month, as some politically correct addendum to our national narrative, but it's at the burning heart of our story. Mm. And that's why, regardless of the topic, you know, race has been, next to freedom, the number one theme that Americans have grappled with. It's embedded in the East Lake Meadows story. It's in the Civil War, of course. It happened because of slavery. Baseball's finest moment was when Jack Roosevelt Robinson, the grandson of a slave, made his way to first base on April 15th, 1947. It's in jazz, founded by that community that had to improvise even more than the improvisation that freedom gives human beings. I mean, on and on and on. It's a dynamic of American life. And so I think that's what I'm talking about. And I could take any other aspect. You don't have to focus on race per se, but you could do anything else that does it. And if you understand the complexities and not shy from them, then you have a dimensional full work that begins to suggest this emotional archaeology I'm talking about. That's not sentimentality or nostalgia. That's the enemy of good work anywhere. But it does suggest that we spend way too long in a rational world where one and one always equals two, and forgetting that what we seek in our love, in our art, in our faith, in our families, in other things, we want one and one to equal three. That's emotional archaeology.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you all day. There is, and it's very important now, just I want to say, an inclusiveness about your work. And you've said, I want to bring everybody in. And I think that couldn't be more important now, because it's inclusive, not just of the good things, but the not so good things. And I think that's important.
Exactly. We can't, you know, baseball players are very fond of, looking up to heaven and thanking God when they hit a grand slam home run.
Right.
They rarely do it when they ground into an inning double play.
Right.
It's all the same plan.
Exactly. Same plan. Well, listen, this has been such a treat to have you on, Ken. Look forward to more and more great work from you. Best of luck with everything. And thank you for doing the Thursday Ken Burns American History. I think that's great. You're bringing all that back. And the current documentary is East Lake Meadow, a public housing story. Ken Burns. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you very much, Paul.
There you go. Ken Burns. So much to talk to him about. To crawl into his head like that and really get a sense of, you know, what drives him to do these amazing films over the last 40 years is just, it's really special. Please, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Go there, subscribe, and tell your friends about it. Ask them to subscribe too. And follow me on social media @PaulMercurio. Thanks, folks. Have a great week.